One of my very best friends from college, a buddy named Devon Claybrooks, we call him Biscuit. He joins us now live from Mobile, Alabama. He is the D-line coach of the Calgary Stampeders, was on that Tampa Bay Buccaneers team when they won the Super Bowl. And full disclosure, I was at Fox Sports Radio back then, and I came down there to work Radio Row and to be with my buddy Biscuit. We call him Biscuit. Biscuit, how in the heck are you? What is going on?
Pretty good. Just at the Senior Bowl in Mobile trying to see what NFL talent I can steal.
Steal to Calgary?
Yeah, see what I can steal is going to fall through the cracks.
Are you guys allowed to use that women and weed are free in California? I mean, in Canada, or is that not, you're not allowed to use that as a bargaining chip?
I mean, actually, women and weed are free everywhere if you look at the previous history of the NFL.
Yeah, true that. Hey, don't be telling anyone's trade secrets anyway. So my buddy Devon Claybrooks and I went to college together, and when he would eat pints of ice cream and pass out on my couch, we never really thought that he'd make it to the Super Bowl. And right, I mean, so here's what happened, right? You were a free agent your rookie year out of East Carolina, and you got picked up by the Cleveland Browns. Matter of fact, me and my college roommate came to see you play the Ravens against the Browns in 2001, I guess it was.
Yeah.
Then you got allocated to the Rhine Fire NFL Europe back when it was there, and you got bit by a poisonous spider in what is the Super Bowl of what was NFL Europe.
Right.
And then you had to rehab. You went down to Birmingham, Alabama, to the Health South, where Dr. James Andrews is, and you recovered. And by week 9, you cleared waivers, and the Bucs picked you up. And your first game as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer that year was either Sunday night or Monday night against the Steelers.
Monday night against Pittsburgh.
Monday night in Pittsburgh against the Steelers, and you played very well. You had a couple of tackles for loss. You got in some guys' faces, yeah. and you played well. And then you stayed on the team as Warren Sapp's backup for the rest of the season. You go on to win the Super Bowl.
Correct.
You guys,
thanks for my bio there, guy.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you also played under Bill Parcells in Dallas. You played with T.O. in San Francisco, and then you've been in Canada for
Denny
the last...
Green.
Yeah, Denny Green.
Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've been in Calgary with the Stampeders for a few years.
Yeah, 4 years.
Now you're their D-line coach.
Yeah, they let anybody coach these days.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Just like they let anybody on the radio. No,
hey, tell me about it, bro. The reason that you're in the NFL for so long and now coaching is because you were a smart, smart player. It's the same reason I'm on the radio. I'm just a smart guy. But... that Super Bowl, obviously, I had an intimate relationship with it because I was working it, and also you were there, and we were there as your guest, and you know all that good stuff. But bottom line, in talking to you about it over the years and even weeks leading up, because I was lucky enough to travel with you the last 3 weeks of the season, including the Super Bowl, to follow that, was Coach John Gruden was in Oakland, and correct me if I'm wrong here, and I'll let you elaborate, but John Gruden was in Oakland before he got to Tampa, and that offense that Bill Callahan and them ran was the offense that he ran in Tampa, and you guys knew what plays were going to be called before they got called.
Oh, well, you're leaving out another key component, that Mark Trestman, who was my coach in Montreal, mm-hmm. who's now the Bears head coach,
right.
was the offensive coordinator there as well. And we actually knew that the problem of it was, is like, okay, they're talking about this. They had a game plan where they're going to run the ball because we're our light defensive line and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. If you look back on the history of the 2002 Bucks, everybody tried to do that, and it didn't seem to work, obviously, because we were like top five in the run.
So it was Simeon Rice and Booger McFarland and Warren Sapp and you and Ellis Wims and Kartrick
Greg
Darby
Spire.
And a bunch of those guys.
Yeah, yeah. And so they're talking about saying that they had their game plan, then they got a new game plan on Friday, which is – the biggest problem of the whole thing is that they never changed their checks.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the same checks that they had the whole season. So when they checked, all five of our turnovers came off the exact same play, if you really want to get really politically
yes.
correct with it. The two of them were on the come. The one play that Gannon would check to it, and Gruden was our scout team quarterback that week, and he ran our scout team. He's like, Gannon has freedom to check to this play. Is where one receiver runs a comeback, the other one runs a post, and the tight end runs like a little drag route. Okay, if you remember correctly, Dwight took both of those comebacks to the house. Dexter Jackson picked off two on the post, and Derek Brooks picked one on the drag route.
Right.
So, therefore, it really wasn't – the thing of it is you can know what a person's going to do, but you still have to stop it. You still have to – like, I mean, I can give you a perfect example. It was a few years ago, my coordinator had a few years ago – we had a guy lay in the bushes and figure out what another team was going to do in the game. And it was like this trick play double pass. We knew it was going to be ran at the 40 because that's where they practiced it at. We called the play out in the game, and they still scored a touchdown on it. So basically the players still have to make plays, and they still have to execute between the white lines.
Yeah, and that's a perfect story because – what you said is they may or may not have changed their plays with 36 hours to go and this, that, and the other. Who cares? They didn't change their checks, and that's the indicator for you guys as to what they're going to call or not call, right?
Correct. 100%. And, you know, and then on top of that, you think about this, and you're not going to change your checks if you're – center is somewhere disappearing and you don't even have him at the game.
Right. And they're blaming it on the game plan. The guy had a mental illness. Of course he disappeared in Tijuana.
Well, and then not to mention, this is what the only thing that behooved me about the whole situation is, granted, you can say Bill Callahan didn't want to be there, right? You can say that and you can say whatever, but who wants to lose a Super Bowl? Like, who wants to be like,
crazy.
Yeah, like, I mean, I love John Gruden to death, but if he helped me get the job and I end up being a head coach, I'm going to kick his tail as bad as he's going to want to kick mine. Like, who wants to be that guy to lose a Super Bowl?
And
every coach that's a head coach or even a coordinator's got an ego. Trust me, you had to have an ego to get the job.
Yeah, and we talked to many of the Ravens players this year before the Colts game, and their former defensive coordinator, Chuck Pagano, who was at East Carolina, but before, you know, you and I were there.
Right, I just saw him. I saw him yesterday.
Oh, you did? In Mobile. Okay.
Yeah.
Coach is a good friend. But, you know, we were talking to some of the players that know him, and we said the best way to show Coach Pagano respect is to beat his ass and to play as hard as possible, because anyone who carries their own weight in football and in competitive sports knows if you dog it, the other guy loses respect for you, not the other way around. And there ain't no
100%.
Way. There ain't no way he's dogging it.
And then 100%. And then I think it had more to do with the personal vendetta with him and Callahan on the fact of the matter that he didn't get his 8,000-yard receiving,
right,
and he finished with 950 because Jerry Rice became a focal point, and that's because Trestman them thought that he lost a step or whatever the offensive staff would start to give Jerry Rice more focal point. And the year before, he had, 1,100 yards, and then the year of the Super Bowl, he had 950, so he was 50 yards short.
Right.
And it really, if you peel back the layers of the onion, it just seems to me that he was really bringing out all this other stuff to explain why he wasn't the focal point. Because if you look at it, it just boils down to he was just mad because he wasn't getting any balls.
Total sour grapes. Talking to my buddy Devon Claybrooks, who was on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl team when they beat the Raiders. That is the story going on in the world of sports today. Biscuit, I want to talk to you about what it's like being a football player the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, because I got a couple hate mails from some people today, and they weren't towards me. They were towards the Ravens organization, saying, I've been a 17-year season ticket holder since the team came back to Baltimore. Shame on you, Steve Bisciotti, ownership group and management, for not getting me to win the lottery. Fans should have a better chance to win tickets, and these tickets are too expensive, and blah, blah, blah. And I try to explain to people that nobody's entitled to anything. You had family and friends scattered all over the country, and you only got a couple tickets, and you and I were there, and at the time, your girlfriend and Jennifer and Brandy, her friend, and some people get left out of the mix. And can you explain to people how hectic it is for a player and the team to organize something at this magnitude, at this level, during these 2 weeks?
Well, at least you guys have two. Like, at least Baltimore has 2 weeks. We didn't have anything but a week. So
right.
It hadn't changed where the Pro Bowl is
That's
a week
right.
between. So we had a week, and then you get two tickets, but you can purchase up to 10 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And then the availability on those tickets all based on your years in the league, your years on the team, and blah, blah, blah. You have to remember that there are a million people with the hands out and the tickets. And it's also the biggest sporting event arguably every year. So you're already, the allotment is sold, and they only allot a certain amount per team per person.
Right.
So for, you know, so say if it's 80,000 people in the Superdome, 50,000 of those tickets are already sold.
Right. They're gone.
They're gone already. They're gone, and they're gone to the highest bidder, corporate sponsors, people that really can afford to pay the money. Now, what sucks is, yeah, fans get lost in the shuffle, but at the end of the day, you can't make everyone happy. I mean, of course, I couldn't make my family happy because everybody wanted to go, but you had to decide and pick and choose. And, yeah, there'll be tickets available, and that's a great thing that, you know, Baltimore has that loyal fan support and following.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess you got to cheer. Where y'all? I guess you need to tell them where you're having a Super Bowl party at, then.
No doubt about it, and we will. By the way, Two Rivers Fish and Steakhouse in Pasadena is where we're going to be for that day of the game, and you can hear the game right here on 105.7 The Fan, so thank you for that, Biscuit. Biscuit, talk about the difference, as you mentioned, between 1 week off and 2 weeks off, because the good thing about it is, for the Ravens specifically and 49ers right now, but we're focusing on the Ravens, is they have Monday, Tuesday, today off, and then they can go in and start working tomorrow. So they had a few days to get their stuff together, because I remember The matter of fact, for the team charter out of Tampa to San Diego, you had to call me the week before the Eagles NFC Championship game and say, hey, if you fly to Tampa, I can put you on the team charter, but I need to know before we even play Philly, because they were planning before you even played in the NFC Championship game.
Well, the thing about it is when you only have a week, everything has to be done, and as cocky as it may seem, you have to assume that you're going to win the championship game, right, which every team does. But you have to make those plans,
yeah,
for planning and logistics and things like that. But at least when you have 2 weeks, you have enough time. The biggest part and the biggest benefit of 2 weeks is the body healing.
Yeah.
And, of course, the biggest negativity about that is that you're in a role and you're in a rhythm, and now you got to wait, and now you're anxious and blah, 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 and those things that you think you can be timing and rust. But for an old team like the Ravens, you know, it's a great thing for them because they're elder statesmen. They got a few old guys. It's great for them to heal up, and they know how to play the game on any given day of the week. They can play the game, and they can control it and turn it on, which I think that gives them a great advantage over the Niners.
Yeah, I think so, too. Colin Kaepernick's a super talented guy, though. I guess we won't talk about the players-only after party after the Super Bowl that the team put on, because that was off the charts, or that giant limo. I don't know what that thing was that you and Ellis rented, but we had our damn blast in that. I don't even hardly remember that now that I mention it. I don't remember any of that that night in San Diego. But who do you like in this game, Biscuit? The Ravens or the 49ers? I know it's early to break it down, but just give me a couple lines on who you like and why.
Well, the ironic thing is everybody talks about this read zone and this mm-hmm. read option. Well, you know, the ironic thing is they've been running the read option for 20 years in Canada. Every team here runs it. Like, it's a play. It's the number one run play here.
It's a staple.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's a staple play here. And I think that Baltimore has the outside linebackers, which would be the DNs, mm-hmm. that are athletic enough that can actually factor in and dictate. And what happened in Atlanta was they tried to dictate, and they said Kaepernick is not going to dictate this game, so we're going to take him away. But the offensive tackle was able to get up on the linebacker, so nobody would take the running back on the dive, so therefore you're a guy short. So through the numbers, you're going to be a guy short, and if you don't track him over when the motion's over, then you're a guy short, and therefore you get gassed as they did.
Yeah, awesome, Biscuit. So you think maybe the veteran leadership and the athleticism of the linebackers. Don't sleep on Donnell Ellerby inside next to Ray. He is an athletic dude, too. Can contain that for sure. You know what? We got to do our radio show together, man. Back when I was on Satellite, Biscuit would come on Saturdays, and we'd do a BS with Biscuit segment. And this Manti Te'o story, before I let you go, this is how I see it real quick, B, is this dude is either the biggest moron ever or the most pathological lying person that there's ever been in the world. Either idiot or patho.
Okay, so this is what I don't get, and I want your opinion on this mm-hmm. as well. Okay, how can a Heisman voter say, well, if I knew this story, it would have came out, I wouldn't have voted for him?
I don't know what that means. It's about football.
Well, exactly. It's between the white lines. Like, okay, he's telling me the man lie, women lie, but the numbers didn't lie. And as for him, I think that he's just got suckered. He got played because it just said that he turned in his phone records, which kind of tricked me too, because
yeah,
he didn't turn in the originals. Like, why wouldn't you turn in the originals?
Right.
Like, I don't get what you're saying. If you're, you know, but I mean, you know, he it's a sucker born every minute. You got to think about it. Every player, and you got to think a player of his magnitude has an ego. And to find out that a girl ditched you and didn't tell you, I don't think I would tell my boys either. You're not even, you know, you have like a minuscule athletic bone in your body, and a minuscule
me?
Is too much for me giving you credit. Yeah.
Please, I'm an athlete and a half. Don't even try it.
Even you, you know, everybody has an ego, and especially what, second place Heisman voter? You think he wants everybody to know that he got played? Like, seriously.
It's crazy.
Like, you ask any reporter, like, nobody would admit that. So, quite naturally, if my dad asked me, how'd she look? I'd be like, yeah, I've seen her. Like, I'm leaving that alone. I'm
yeah,
like,
right, 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 right.
Like, if your boys say, well, how'd she look? You know what I mean?
She's banging,
like,
son.
You got to think about it. All these guys that are bad-mouthing, they probably lied on themselves once or twice for a chick. I promise you that.
Hey, Biscuit, how soon till this dude, Tui Asisopo, ends up in a river somewhere? Like, this guy's going to be floating down the river somewhere soon, no doubt about it. I mean, come on, man.
You say there's a sucker born every minute, and there's definitely one or two at Notre Dame.
No doubt. All right, B, I appreciate you, man. Enjoy the Senior Bowl out in Mobile, and we'll talk to you soon, okay, bud?
All All right, buddy. Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Devon Claybrooks. He won the Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Oakland Raiders.